is a pretty.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Are spanking, paddling, or switching appropriate ways to discipline a child? Well, it depends on whom you talk to and perhaps what part of the country you live in or were raised in. This is a topic that comes up every once in a while, and it's back again because of an incident in which a prominent NFL player was reported to have used a switch on his 4-year-old son, which broke the child's skin and caused welts. Some call that child abuse, but others, including the player, Adrian Peterson, say that's the way their parents punished them, and it worked. This form of punishment seems more of a normal part of the culture in the South than in many other parts of the country. In fact, corporal punishment is still legal in North Carolina schools, though it is left up to the discretion of local school boards. So we're going to spend this hour examining the pros, if there are any, and cons of corporal punishment. Is it ever appropriate to strike a child in order to discipline them, to use a belt or a paddle or a switch? When does making a point cross over into child abuse, and what works effectively in lieu of corporal punishment? We're joined by Dr. Susan Campbell, a licensed clinical psychologist who moved from Georgia to become executive director of the Council for Children's Rights here in 2013. Previously, she had served as the first executive director of the Northwest Georgia Child Advocacy Center and as clinical director of the Georgia Center for Children in Atlanta. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Deborah Sendek is the program director for the Center for Effective Discipline, a program of the National Child Protection Training Center of Gunderson Health System. CED provides information on research about the effects of corporal punishment on children. She joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Kenya Henderson is director of the Families Together program at the YWCA of the Central Carolinas, which, among other things, helps families stay together and helps parents understand ways to deal with their children that are perhaps more effective and gentler than paddling, switching, spanking, etc. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
What constitutes corporal punishment? I mean, how would you, the three of you, define it? I'll begin with you, Dr. Campbell.
In North Carolina, corporal punishment is defined as the intentional infliction of pain. The distinction between that and abuse is abuse results.
The intentional infliction of physical pain or just pain?
Of physical pain.
Okay. All right.
Right. And so the distinction between that and what is labeled abuse in the statutes involves whether the infliction of pain results in a serious physical injury to the child.
So a spanking or a swat, a little pat on the popo, or just going like that to somebody's hand, is that corporal punishment?
Yes.
It is corporal punishment. And you're shaking your head, yes, it is.
Yes.
Nodding. How would you look at that, Deborah?
Yes, it is. And again, it's that, just like Dr. Campbell said, the intentional. And so even if it doesn't result in an outward injury, it's still an intentional to harm or to hurt. And that's the definition behind that.
So in your minds, is this ever acceptable? Is it ever acceptable to spank a child, to swat at them, to slap their hand like that, which hurts, by the way, it stings for a second. Is it ever acceptable?
I think there's a distinction between acceptable and effective, and it's certainly never acceptable to physically injure a child. Decades of research have shown us, and I think we'll probably talk more about that later, but that physical discipline is not the most effective way to teach a child, and that is at the root of what discipline is supposed to be, to teach a child.
The reason I ask if it's acceptable is because I don't know if it works or not. I know that it got my attention as a child.
Well, the shock value will always get your attention initially. So it's effective if your goal is to try to correct the behavior in the moment, but it doesn't teach you what to do differently.
Mm-hmm. And also a very sharp no, stop, will also stop a behavior. So it is not necessarily the hit or the spank that stops. It is the interruption. And so if a child is, you know, ready to touch a hot stove, you can slap the hand and the hand will move back because the child looks at you to see why they've been slapped. At the same time, you grab that hand, pull that hand back and say, no, don't touch. That will hurt. Hmm. that will also stop the behavior. Yeah. So that's why when people say, well, it stops the behavior, well, let's try some other strategies that also then can teach.
When a child is sometimes spanked or slapped or whatever, they will cry in an amount that is, shall we say, out of proportion to what was done to them. Is that because they're crying out of the pain, or they're crying out of some kind of an emotional shock that has occurred because the person that they look to for help and support, the person that they love, the person that they trust has suddenly hit them? Is that why they're crying out of proportion sometimes?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's both. Like I said, the shock value, the person that I love just, you know, hurt me. Mm-hmm. And the emotional effect that that ultimately has on the child. So absolutely, I think it's a combination of both.
We've already gotten an email. James says he is not from the South and he wants to know what is a switch. Well, my definition is... A switch, and sometimes the child has to go out and do this, is where you go out and you get a tree branch or a little twig off a tree. Now, well, it's about an inch big, maybe as big around as your pinky.
Mine were those flexible ones that on the bushes at my grandmother's house.
You pull it off the bush, you bring in your own weapon of destruction, and then you are hit with it. That's a switch, right?
Right.
so there you go. But you're not saying that if you spank or if you swat at a child with the back of you, with the front of you, the palm of your hand, that's not child abuse, is it? Or can it be?
It can be.
If you use a switch automatically, is that child abuse or can it be?
If it leaves an injury, then
right.
It's child abuse.
If you use a belt, as my father used to do, is that child abuse or is it... not.
If it leaves a bruise or if it breaks the skin, that's child abuse.
Hmm.
And most state laws will also say with an object. But again, it is very fuzzy. It is not clearly defined. So once you start, like even when we're talking in schools, it is a wooden paddle. That wooden paddle, we cannot take on an airplane on our carry-on luggage because TSA will stop and say it is a weapon. But that same wooden paddle is used in our school. So again, it's a gray area. There's not a clear distinction.
And in North Carolina, there's no restriction on the type of implement that can be used to paddle a child, nor the number of times a child can be struck, which is pretty concerning.
Now, Chris in Mooresville has also joined us by email saying, Mike, your intro seems to equate spanking with switching to the point of drawing blood. Please make sure that your audience is aware that there is a broad spectrum of spanking, and most that spank would agree that drawing blood is way over the line, the same way that sending a child to bed without dinner may be okay, but not feeding a child for days would be child abuse. Would you all agree with that? Deborah?
Well, I would agree that, again, this is where we come back to spanking, hitting with an open hand is not very rarely will that leave anything more than a red mark or some slight bruising. It would not be defined as child abuse. The issue is that when we see physical child abuse, the majority of those cases start out with a parent who is trying to punish, or as they will say, discipline. But as we'll talk later, discipline is teaching, discipline is positive. So what happens is the majority of these physical abuse cases that we see start out as a parent who is trying to punish their child, and it starts out with a hit, with a spank, and then escalates. And so with an open hand hitting a 3 or a 4-year-old, by the time they're 6, they're 8, they're 10, that open hand is not going to be as effective. And so that's where people will move to the switch or to another object.
Back when I grew up, I don't think anybody talked about this. I don't think anybody talked about child abuse, quite honestly, but they certainly didn't consider spanking or getting a switch out or using a belt on the backside of some child as being abusive. They just thought it was correcting the child and making them perform better. When did the shifting begin to think? Oh, when did the thinking begin to shift?
Well, you know, a number of things. Yes, we had the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act, which, again, brought us into, there were a number of things in child sexual abuse, child physical abuse, child neglect that people understood and knew but didn't have the definition, didn't have the medical expertise and background. And so in the 1970s, when we started to talk about child abuse and the definitions and the medical terms, Child Protective Service, so a lot of that started to change the 1950s, 1960s, but more in the 1970s and forward that we started to have this recognition.
Is corporal punishment more of a Southern thing, as I said it was? And I said that because I did a lot of reading yesterday about this, and people were saying, well, this happens more often in the South. It's more acceptable in the South. It happens in the schools in the South, et cetera. It's a Southern thing. Would you agree with that? And
that
if so, why?
That is what the polling data show, that
why
it's
is
more
it
frequent in the South. It's more frequent among conservatives. It's more frequent among folks who have a lower socioeconomic status.
Because CNN's Don Lemon, who is an anchor for CNN, he's an African-American. It was part of a panel discussion on this topic, and he said that whippings and switch spankings come from behavior learned from slave masters and which have been passed down, and that in fact, perhaps parents would switch their children so that the slave master wouldn't. They would hurt the child less, but it wouldn't be – they were protecting their children, essentially, and it was passed down. Do you think that's accurate? You're an African-American. You think that's accurate?
I mean, there's –
because white people do
that.
This too. It's not just black people that do this.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I think there's some truth to that.
And he also said that he was spanked as a child, not beaten, spanked. He made the distinction. There's a difference, he says. Is there?
Sure. I think there's a difference between being beaten and spanked. And spanking, you know, the evidence on mild and infrequent spanking is less conclusive than what we know about frequent, regular, and especially intense spanking and the impact of that on children.
Now, there's an old saying, spare the rod and spoil the child. And many believe that's from the Bible. It is not. It comes from a 1664 poem by Samuel Butler. But that phrase does echo some things that are in the Bible. Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth the rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes, diligently. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Proverbs 23:13, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. And last example, Proverbs 23:14, thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell. If the South is more prone to corporal punishment, is it because of a religious basis?
I think that has something to do with it. But there are, when you look at the term rod in Hebrew, that's translated in five different ways.
Okay.
And so it can translate as the term tribe, which is a group of people, a scepter, which is a lighted symbol of authority used by kings and rulers, a stick, which is what we refer to the most, a twig or a branch.
Mm-hmm.
A staff is something that's curved that shepherds use to direct their sheep. And most importantly, guidance, which is a symbolic for leadership and direction, comfort.
So if we're taking it from Proverbs, we may be taking it incorrectly because of a translation.
Absolutely.
Problem. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Diamonds Direct South Park, offering certified diamonds, more than 5,000 engagement ring mountings, pearls, and colored gemstones. Sharon Road across from South Park Mall, diamonds-direct.com. And Northeastern University, applicants can take part in a graduate school application workshop and meet with career services staff during the graduate open house, Saturday, October 18th. Info at northeastern.edu/Charlotte. Rick Nahara is almost white. That's his way of saying he's Latino. A performer, he noticed that Hispanics are underrepresented on TV, so he decided to take matters into his own hands. He realized that writers control the ethnicity of TV characters, so he started writing roles for non-whites. And he's about to perform his one-man show in Charlotte on Friday. He joins us to talk about all that and more tomorrow at 9.
on the next Diane Rehm Show. With a month to go before midterm elections, Republicans are making gains in their bid to retake the Senate. Which midterm races to watch and what results could mean for immigration, tax reform, and social programs.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about corporal punishment today, what constitutes it, and what are the alternatives to it, which we will get to in a moment or two. Dr. Susan Campbell is with us, a licensed clinical psychologist and executive director of the Council for Children's Rights. Deborah Sendek is program director of the Center for Effective Discipline with the National Child Protection Training Center. And Kenya Henderson is director of Families Together at the YWCA of the Central Carolinas. You were just telling me off the air, Dr. Campbell, that the Catholic Church has come down against corporal punishment. You're telling me that the nuns don't slap you with a ruler anymore like they did when I was there?
The evidence is that the Catholic Church is steadily eliminating physical punishment in the schools. It's hard to find a diocese that uses it. The Presbyterian Church went even further, and in their General Assembly approved a motion condemning corporal punishment in any setting, even the home. The Methodists passed something similar in 2004, noting, quote, "It's difficult to imagine Jesus of Nazareth condoning any action that's intended to hurt children physically or psychologically."
In fairness to the Holy Cross nuns that I went to school with, they never slapped anybody with a ruler, although they would slam it down on your desk just to get your attention,
right,
like that. And it got your attention. Corporal punishment in schools is legal in most southern states: Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, North and South Carolina, Tennessee. And it's also legal in Arizona and Texas, Missouri, Colorado, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Wyoming. I didn't count the number, but why? Why
19.
Okay, do these states have something in common with each other? Why these states? Why not Massachusetts? Why not California? Why not Oregon? Does anybody know? What is it about these states, aside from the fact that most of them are in the South?
I think that's the majority. There are 19 states, as you just named. There are states that use corporal punishment much more often than others. So you did say Idaho, you did say Arizona, you did say Colorado, Wyoming. But those states, what we find is the numbers are very, very low. Mm-hmm. In Arizona, we have two districts that allow. So out of the whole state, there are only two districts.
How does North Carolina stack up with those states?
North Carolina is moving forward quickly. It is going district by district. You have about six districts right now that still allow, and I think out of those six, maybe only four are using it.
What about South Carolina? Because we're right on the border with South Carolina.
South Carolina, more prevalent. Many more districts are using it. You've had advocates in North Carolina that have worked district by district. The state school, the Board of Education in North Carolina 2 years ago passed a resolution, but that's just a resolution from the Board of Education to say we do not approve of or support school corporal punishment. But districts themselves are allowed to make that determination unless there was a state law.
And is that the case? We have a North Carolina state law that says that allows districts to make their own conclusions, to draw their own conclusions on this and set their own policies on this. Is that the case in most of the states where corporal punishment is still allowed in schools, that the districts themselves have the final say?
Yes, yes. Up to the district.
And that, I guess, can lead to its own problems. In North Carolina, school systems where corporal punishment is most often used, at least from a cursory glance at some of the statistics yesterday, are in rural areas, with Robeson, Graham, and Macon counties in our state being the worst offenders. Now, Robeson is down east of us. And they use it far more than second place Graham County, which I think is to the west of us. 141 uses of corporal punishment in Robeson County in the 2012-13 school year versus 31 in Graham. More third and fourth graders receive corporal punishment than other grades, and more Native Americans and whites receive corporal punishment than other ethnic groups with Native Americans way ahead. And part of that is because Robinson County leads the state, and that's where a lot of Lumbee Indians are living. What does that tell you? What do these statistics tell you?
I think one of the concerning things about Robinson County, and from my understanding, they actually have declined in their use of it significantly over the past several years, but the fact that the numbers are still that high is concerning. You mentioned the number of American Indian children there, according to the 2011 census, was about 43%, but they are disproportionately impacted by the physical discipline. Their numbers are more like 70%+ of those children who are being physically disciplined.
So it's
I
not
think that says something about some possible bias within the school system.
I was going to ask you if you think there's a racial or ethnic bias that's operating here.
I think it's something that certainly warrants evaluation.
You say, Deborah, that there is very little research to prove that physical punishment improves the child's behavior in the long run. In fact, Murray Strauss, who's a sociologist and co-director of the Family Research Laboratory at the University of New Hampshire, he's retired now, has studied corporal punishment for decades, and he says that though some believe that corporal punishment curtails misbehavior, the opposite is true. You agree with that?
Yes.
And he says it's been linked to a host of problems, including increasing the probability, not possibility, but the probability of a child being physically aggressive. Again, you found that to be the case?
Yes.
You're the psychologist. Why would that be the case? Why would this not be a deterrent, and why would it lead to other, worse, more aggressive behavior problems?
I think there are a couple of different factors. One is it has it creates a sense of the world is not a safe place. So I am and I have learned now that the way to consequate somebody for something that they've done to me is hit them, because that's what happens to me. I get hit when I have done something wrong. It can generate increased feelings of anger, especially in older children. It generates a sense of humiliation. So there are all kinds of negative emotional factors that accompany that kind of disciplinary response.
Is that why in North Carolina, among the rules governing corporal punishment in the schools, you can no longer administer it in a classroom with other students present? Is that because we recognize that there is a humiliation factor here and they wanted to remove that? But there's humiliation in being spanked.
Sure. That would be my assumption behind the change.
Also, the other thing is that we look at the role modeling. You know, in schools, at home, the parents, the teachers are our role models. And so what a child sees is when a parent is angry, when they're frustrated, when they're disappointed. When those particular emotions, what happens? You act out in anger and you act out aggressively. So what does that teach the child? So on the playground, if someone makes me upset, if someone does something that aggravates me, well, I'm going to follow what the role model taught me, which is to act out, to reach out and hit. So again, it's that role modeling piece. And again, aggression is taught. The child sees someone act that way. And so, you know, in a classroom, a child misbehaves. If a child is paddled, not only the humiliation, but what it has taught the child is that when these things happen, we deal with them instead of using words, instead of having consequences, instead of making amends, we act out with hitting, with aggression. And so that's the role modeling that occurs.
Kenya, before I ask you a question about how you do this, what you say about this in your Families Together program, tell us what the Families Together program is briefly.
Families Together is an 18-month transitional housing program that serves homeless families with minor children.
Okay. So is this a topic of conversation, or is this a problem with these people? Because these people have a great many life issues that they have to come to terms with, being homeless being the major one and all the things that are associated with that. But is corporal punishment something that has to be addressed?
Absolutely. We have a curriculum that we use called the Nurturing Parenting Curriculum, and we are able to render an assessment, which gives us an idea of their personal parenting style. What I can say is since we've been doing this since 2008, we've never had a parent disagree with the result of their assessment. So what they find is that
meaning what? You'll tell them what about themselves? What will you say?
Well, they'll learn that either they are parenting the way that they were parented mm-hmm. and they absolutely have no issue with that, or they have issues with how they were disciplined and are searching for ways to do it differently. Mm-hmm. And so there are five constructs. So we look at whether or not their expectations are age appropriate for the child. We look at their level of empathy, because we find that parents that have low empathy are the ones that use spanking the most, because they are not able to put themselves in a child's shoes, or they're just not equipped with the tools to do something different. It also gives us an idea of family roles and how they view power and independence. So the curriculum can be used two ways, as a group-based model or an individual model. We've opted to do it individually because each household has a different set of needs with a different set of stressors. And so we find that they're a lot more transparent about what they're facing in the home, and then we're able to customize a plan to help teach them new tools.
And I'm sure that there are people who use corporal punishment in that group, but I don't know whether you can answer this question or not, but would you say that that mirrors the number of those people, or the percentage of those people that use corporal punishment in this group of people, would mirror that of society at large, or are they more likely to use corporal punishment because of the stresses in their life?
They are more likely to use, and many of them do. We learn later on that that's because that's the only thing that they know to do.
Mm-hmm.
So many parents feel helpless. If you say to a parent that you are not supposed to spank your child, they don't understand. They feel like that's just us giving them permission for their child to just run wild. So we're able to give them new tools and show them alternatives to spanking. And they are so proud when they are able to see some of the results. But you mentioned the stressors. Okay, obviously, if you're in a homeless situation, you're low income, you know, you're coming from hotels and shelters and things of that nature, there are a lot of stressors that come along with that. And so the last thing a parent wants to do a lot of days is to implement some of the alternatives that we teach them. So we acknowledge very early on that it's not easy, but it's proven and it's possible.
Are the alternatives... do they take more time than saying no or slapping a child? They take more time to get the desired result?
It can, because it requires consistency. So in any...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It requires consistency. So yes, it has to be a little bit more than no, don't do that, mm-hmm. depending on the age of the child. And so we teach them age-appropriate techniques to help address the behavior, not the immediate behavior, but how to stop it long-term.
I was going to say, too, a lot of these things are more labor-intensive on the front end,
yes. mm-hmm.
but in the long run, they take much less time, because you actually have taught the child what to do that's appropriate, so you don't have to continue saying no, 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 no.
Absolutely.
The American Academy of Pediatrics believes that corporal punishment can actually have a negative influence upon a child's self-image and thus interfere with his academic achievement or her academic achievement. that, of course, refers to corporal punishment administered in schools. Would the same be true if it was administered at home? Would that hurt their academic achievement? Would it lower their self-image at home?
One of the things that we see with children, with parents that use corporal punishment, is for younger children, their verbal skills are not as advanced as parents who use talking and reasoning and consequences for behavior, which makes perfect sense, because if a child is doing something, I say no, I swat, typically then my other words are going to be, you were bad, you know, and I'm talking about the behavior, but not in positive terms, versus if I stop the child's behavior and talk, we cannot do that. That will hurt the dog. We have to be nice to the dog. This is how we pet the dog. We don't pull tail. And so that whole exchange is actually increasing a child's verbal skills.
Well, give me an example of how you would handle this. A mom's in the grocery store with two children in the cart, and they want something off the shelves, and they're grabbing for it off the shelves, or they simply want it, and they keep telling mommy that they want it, and they start to throw a temper tantrum, and mommy says no. How do you reason with a toddler in the grocery store, in the cart, in front of other people, or on an airplane, or in a public situation where you want them to stop whatever it is they're doing? How do you do it?
I think there are a couple different approaches, and there's a great book that I used to refer my clients to called 1-2-3 Magic by Thomas Phelan. Mm-hmm. He says, and I'm catching on your phrase, how do we reason with them? He says that the two mistakes that we make most often as parents are we talk too much and we get too emotional. So I think being very succinct in responding to the child, not reasoning with them, but being very clear about what behaviors are acceptable and not, and what the consequence is going to be. And if the consequence is, that you have to leave the store, you have to leave the store. Sometimes it's ignoring things, ignoring behaviors that are not causing too much, they're not causing pain to the other child in the car seat. They're just creating some embarrassment for you, recognizing as a parent that everybody goes through that, and this is not a reflection on you as a parent. You can let it go and ignore it. You don't want to reward it by giving them the thing they're asking for.
That's a great point. And I was going to basically share the same thing, because a lot of times as the adult, we are thrown off by that child's behavior. But it goes back to, it's age appropriate for a child to see something in a store and actually want it. It's age appropriate for them to cry.
And you have to see that as a good thing, because they're at age, they're performing at their age level.
Absolutely. But if you don't understand child development, you're going to take that personal, like, you know, my child is just out of control. He or she is doing something so totally wrong. And that's not the case at all. That's what they are supposed to do.
So a lot of what we teach parents is about preventing something from happening in the first place. So setting the expectations before you go into the store. What I'm doing in the store is buying 5 things for us for dinner, and we're not buying anything else. And if, you know, such and such happens, the consequence will be this when you get out. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, give your child something to do in the cart. Get the big, huge cart and let them drive it while you're shopping, or have toys that that they play with in the cart, or a book that are the only time that they use those things. Mm-hmm. So that you're providing them with some distraction during that time period.
I don't want to say that I was spanked a lot as a child, but I was spanked occasionally. But the other thing that they would say, my parents would say, is, because I said so. Is that effective?
I have to say that I've said it occasionally myself. I think it is important that children understand that sometimes there are things they just aren't going to understand, and they have to have respect for you as the parent to make a decision that you know is in their best interest. I think certainly it helps to explain to a child why you've said this. Why you think this thing is in their best interest. It's not okay for you to eat Pop-Tarts before dinner, because then you won't want to eat your dinner, and your brain needs good food.
When we come back, I want to talk about this cycle of corporal punishment. I slap my child, I spank my child, I switch my child because that's what was done to me. And we've talked a lot about abuse, about spousal abuse and child abuse being part of a cycle that needs to be stopped. And I'm assuming that this is a lesser version of that, but probably the same thing. I want to come back and talk about that and share a lot of comments that have come in while we've been talking from our listeners. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Latin School, with a kindergarten admissions open house October 17th at 9:30 a.m. and an open house for all grades November 7th at 9:30 a.m. Info at charlottelatin.org. And Tyndall Subaru Gastonia. October delivers the new Subaru 2015 Legacy with Subaru EyeSight Driver Assist technology, monitoring traffic and reacting to avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. With a month to go before midterm elections, Republicans are making gains in their bid to retake the Senate. Which midterm races to watch, and what the results could mean for immigration, tax reform, and social programs? The topic of the Diane Rehm Show coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock right here on WFAE. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can do so by emailing us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Stay connected to what's going on locally, nationally, and around the world. Get up to date on the latest news of the day by listening to All Things Considered 4 till 6:30 p.m. on 90.7 WFAE. Join Mark Rumsey and the cast of journalists from NPR and WFAE to hear the most thorough and comprehensive news coverage that happened while you were at work. That's All Things Considered 4 till 6:30 weekday afternoons on Charlotte's NPR news source, WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about corporal punishment with Deborah Sendek, who's program director of the Center for Effective Discipline at the National Child Protection Training Center. Kenya Henderson is director of Families Together program at the YWCA of the Central Carolinas. And Dr. Susan Campbell is a licensed clinical psychologist and executive director of the Council for Children's Rights. We've spent a lot of time on this program over the years talking about the cycle of spouse abuse, the cycle of child abuse, the cycle being the fact you were abused as a child, so you abuse your child. You witnessed your mother being abused by your father, and so if you're a man, you abuse your spouse. And the idea is to break that cycle and show people alternative ways to deal with the tensions that come their way. Is corporal punishment where you say, I spanked my child because I was spanked? Is that a cycle too? I mean, that's obviously a cycle, but it's not as serious as abuse, I suppose. But is what you're doing the same technique, breaking the cycle?
I think so, because I think what we're trying to do is provide education, as Kenya was speaking about earlier. We are trying to provide parents with tools that are different from those that their parents taught them. So if the only discipline you ever received as a child was spanking, that may be, unless you've had psychology courses, the only thing that you know to do. So getting some education.
You told one of our producers, Dr. Campbell, that you watched the doling out of corporal punishment by your father on your four brothers take a toll on your father. Explain that.
That's slightly accurate. My father was one of four brothers who had a very patriarchal family and was only disciplined in that way and pretty severely himself. When he became a father, my family also had four children, but only two boys. And I saw as a younger child him really struggling with knowing how to discipline my older brother effectively, and the pain it caused, not only physically my brother, but the relationship pain that it caused the two of them. And thankfully, that's something that they worked out before my father passed away.
And Deborah, you say that the Center for Effective Discipline says, at least, that there is a clear evidence that this physical punishment puts children at risk for negative outcomes, including mental health problems later in life. What kind of mental health problems are we talking about? And would these come from severe corporal punishment or just being spanked or slapped occasionally?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. We almost equate this similar to smoking, okay? You can smoke a pack or two packs of cigarettes per day and never end up with lung cancer and never end up with health problems. Someone else, secondhand smoke, ends up with health problems. So, again, there's so many things. There's so much about who we are as a person and our resiliency and other factors. So what we see is corporal punishment is a risk factor. It doesn't bring positive. And some people, just like you may say, you know, Mike, you may say, I was spanked growing up, I was hit growing up, and I turned out to be okay.
I was just going to bring that up, yes.
We may debate you on that, you know. But okay, you know, you did. You said, yeah, I turned out okay. I have a good relationship with my family. I'm not aggressive. I don't abuse people. I don't do things. But then we also see other people that may, what we would consider to be mild corporal punishment, that end up in adulthood with depression, with feelings of self-worth that are not strong. So again, each person is unique. Each person is different. There are lots of things that happen in our life that create risk factors. And so what we know is, why create one more? But what we do see is adult depression. We see aggression. Oftentimes when we're talking about intimate partner violence, domestic violence, family violence, we oftentimes, when we talk with people who are victims of domestic violence, they will tell us, well, yes, I was hit. And I was told my parents loved me. They did it out of love. They did it in order to correct me. And yes, with my partner, I did disappoint him, or I did do something, and so maybe I deserved it. And so we see that pattern continue. We also hear from abusers that, yes, they were hit. If you go in and you work with a prison population, very rarely are you going to hear an adult prisoner or even someone in juvenile incarceration talk to you and say, well, yeah, when I misbehaved, there were consequences for my misbehavior. I had to make amends. No, they will tell you, I was hit, I was beat. Mm-hmm. Now, so where does that line go from what is a hitting or a spanking? I think it's ironic when we talk about children, we change the word from hitting to spanking, mm-hmm. to pop, to a swat. We wouldn't say that in a domestic, an adult domestic violence. We don't say, well, he popped her or he spanked her. We would say he hit her. Mm. So why do we change that word? Same thing, discipline and punishment. Discipline is to teach. Discipline should have an effect that is a positive learning experience. But so often we say, well, that spanking was discipline. No, that is punishment. And I think we need to be very clear on our terms.
And it's interesting that we trivialize it and minimize it as it relates to children when we have outlawed corporal punishment in the military, in prisons. The only place we can still hit people legally is our most vulnerable people, our children.
Well, I think it's because, and we're going to go back to this phrase that Deborah brought up a second ago, which I was going to bring up. I was spanked as a child, and I turned out okay. I know that as an adult, I look back on that, and I was acting badly, or I didn't understand what my parents, why my parents didn't want me to do these things. They were older. They were wiser. They knew best. They stopped it through their way, and I turned out okay. Now, you all deal with people who tell you this. As a psychologist and as somebody at the Y who dealing with families together, does this come as a revelation? Is it harder? Is it a harder sell when somebody tells you, well, I was spanked. I'm okay. Why shouldn't I keep doing it to my child?
I think it's case by case. I mean, I've had parents to initially make that statement to me. And as we dug deeper and got to the root of some of the pain and hurt that she was experiencing, it went back to that experience. So the question is, are you okay, really? Not without some type of rehabilitation or some type of...
And I think part of what Deborah said earlier, too, is that there's such a mixture of factors. Some people are turning out okay in spite of being spanked, not because they were spanked.
Right.
I see.
Right.
And Deborah, you just talked about discipline being something that becomes a positive learning experience. What form of discipline tends to make something a positive learning experience?
Well, I think anything in terms of if you can make amends. Because what we want to teach is we want to build empathy. We want to teach children that their behavior not only has a result on what is happening to them, but it may have a result on or effect on other people around them, okay? And so, again, how do we become that adult that has a caring, compassionate outlook? It's because of that empathy. And so we want to teach children that when you do something, there's a consequence to that behavior.
What is an appropriate consequence for bad behavior? And I know it's age appropriate, but give me a couple of examples of what an appropriate consequence would be, particularly if you're told not to do something and you do it anyway.
You want to make it as if you can, as natural or as logical as can be. So let's say you've told your child the bike needs to come in. You know, if you leave your bike outside on the sidewalk, it may not be there tomorrow morning. The bike needs to come in. You've told your child, the child's had enough time to bring the bike in. The child's come in the house and not brought the bike in. Guess what? I probably am not going to leave that bike out overnight and take the chance that it's going to get stolen. So I put the bike away, but that means you don't have the privilege to ride the bike for the next X number of days. You've lost that privilege because you did not respond the way you needed to. You didn't take care of the bike. If it's a toy that you have used and you've broken it because you have not taken care with it, it's not an accident, we don't replace that toy. Sorry, that just doesn't happen. If you earn the money, then you can buy that toy on your own, but I don't replace something that you haven't taken care of.
And I think it's also important to, you know, in a situation like that, when the child does follow through with bringing a bike in a house, that, you know, compliment the child. You know, I appreciate you, you know, bringing a bike in. Yeah, it's finding ways to.
Because you stress positive reinforcement of of good behavior. So talk about that for a second.
Well, I think we are, a lot of people are programmed to just highlight the inappropriate behavior. But if we focus on the behavior that's acceptable and appropriate and highlight it, you know, if we spend more time affirming our children and encouraging them.
You know, we do this with dogs. We say good boy for doing something. We reward them with a doggy treat for doing something good. We don't do this with kids. We slap them instead if they do something bad.
And how sad is that?
Yeah, we tend to ignore the good behavior, the child's behaving, and we're like, oh, I don't want to say anything, instead of saying, oh, I'm so proud, great job. And I think, just like Dr. Campbell said, keep it short, don't go into a whole dissertation, but just saying, very proud, great job.
So what does that say about adult relationships in America in the 21st century with children when we are not allowed to hit our spouse anymore? It's considered very bad to hit your spouse. But we can't hit our child. When you reward your dog for being good, but we don't reward the children necessarily for being good. What does that say about us?
Or we spank the child for hitting the dog.
right.
Well, that's another thing that one of you brings up in the notes is that discipline is supposed to correct bad behavior, and it's supposed to illustrate the proper behavior. But if you're spanking a child, you are engaging in bad behavior. Let me share some of the comments that have come across while we've been talking. Diana on Facebook: not every child is the same. The consequences of corporal punishment can be unpredictable. It can discipline some children. It can morally and physically destroy others. There are better ways to teach children what is good or bad. Everybody's nodding in agreement. Meg on Facebook: hitting a child is not discipline. It teaches fear, and that hitting is okay and is a knee-jerk reaction that takes no thought on the parent's part. It's ineffective for helping a child learn. You could have written these, right? Martha on Facebook.
Great listeners.
Martha on Facebook: human beings at any age do not need physical pain to learn. They may need something aversive, or they may need an incentive. Physical pain, though, is something people get through. Psychologically, it is not an effective learning tool. Chat emails: thanks for the conversation. Could you ask how many of your guests have children, and how do they discipline their children?
I was so waiting for this question. And actually, when I was studying, I studied child and family development. One of the things that I initially struggled with: are the people going to receive me? Because, no, I'm not a mother. Will they actually accept what I have to say? And my advisor and mentor, Dr. Joanne Springs, was very quick to say, but that's why you're here. You are studying development. You know, parents don't get a handbook. And so when I have the opportunity to work with the families that I serve, I immediately acknowledge them. You are the mom. You are your child's first teacher. And I am just here to help support and hold your arms up and share some development tools and things that you may not know so that we can work together. So that's what's made it effective. It's not me saying this is what you need to do as a mom, because I can't relate to being a mother, but I can share what the research says and what the techniques are that are effective. And I think that that's been received very well.
Dr. Campbell, Deborah, are you moms?
I am.
I am also.
Okay. Respond to that question. How do you discipline your children?
I do not spank. I do the best I can to create expectations about what I think the behaviors are that I expect to happen within certain places and what the consequences will be. I try to be as simple and direct as I can about, this is what I need for you to do or stop doing. This is what the consequence will be.
What if they don't?
Then a consequence is, as Deborah was saying earlier, something that is as natural as possible. Either you're removed from something that was rewarding because you're not following directions in that place, and a timeout. And we generally recommend a minute per year of the child's age for timeout for younger children. It might be making some kind of amend. If something has been broken intentionally, then there has to be some effort at repairing that, or something that fits the crime,
right,
basically.
Deborah?
My son's 25 now, so
he made it.
Right, right. He made it, and I have to say I'm very proud of him. And he was never hit, never spanked. He also knew very clearly in my job that I worked in child abuse prevention when he was young. Particularly, I worked with adolescent sex offenders. And so, unfortunately, he was very aware of the field of child abuse and neglect very early on in his life because he would accompany me sometimes on some of my trips. But again, using consequences, I think my son was probably 2.5, 3, and the word he would say consequence, you know, he knew he misbehaved. There's a consequence, and he used to, in fact, some of the things, if he mistreated or didn't take care of a toy or whatever, there was a place in our garage that he called lockup because, again, of the work that I was doing. And he would say, toy and lockup, you know, and it would be, well, guess what happened? And so he knew those types of things. Again, tried to really reinforce the positives, the behaviors that were appropriate. And so, yes, he's 25, and very proud of him. He's on his own at this point in time.
I have less than 30 seconds left, and I'm just curious. When you spank a child or smack a child, it's instant. I mean, it happens in the moment, and it's done. But if you have a timeout or you take something away from the child, there's a time delay. Does that seem to have an impact on the lesson learned?
Yes,
and one of the things we know, too, is that some research has shown that children actually misbehave again within 10 minutes of a spanking. So that doesn't have as positive of a result.
Dr. Susan Campbell with the Council for Children's Rights, Deborah Sendek with the Center for Effective Discipline, and Kenya Henderson, Director of Families Together Program at the YWCA. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a